All right, everybody, welcome back to Moss Radio on mossradio.com. You are listening to Drop in Harm Reduction Chats, which is your show about harm reduction and substance use, as well as just community care. So we're going to keep going. I have a guest here. If you want to introduce yourself, also remember that I'm DJ Crook.
Hello, DJ Crook. It is I, Moof, as I am known, about the parts where it matters. I have over a decade of experience in the fun substances to have fun adjustment sphere with a focus on keeping people happy, healthy, and safe throughout their experience.
Amazing. Just so y'all know, we are your local online community radio. Prioritizing and practicing engagement with each other, listeners, participants, and communities. And Moss Radio streams at select hours, changing every week. You can find our programming and exact hours on the schedule page of our website. Also, this is pre-recorded, so you cannot chat with us live.
Sorry.
Unfortunately. I guess first question I would ask you is how would you define what?
Let me say for the record, I will try to be in chat answering questions, typing, if people are listening. So I will try to be there answering. It just won't, we won't be responding to it live on air, but I'll be in the chat. Yeah. All right, continue. Sorry.
No, you're good. Of course, this is when the sirens go off. How would you define harm reduction?
Harm reduction. I see it.
What is the framework of it?
Let me start by saying I'm a big believer that every person has the right and to some extent a desire to alter their consciousness in some form of way by ingesting something, by having some sort of experience or whatever. And I believe harm reduction is making sure that people come to the other side of the altered consciousness without long-term debilitating effects like death or brain death or crippling injury, whatever it may be.
And how have you developed that framework over time?
Well, I've been interested in recreational drug consumption ever since I was in middle school. I remember getting weird looks from librarians about the books I would check out. Yeah, and it was always very focused on the physiology of like taking drugs, like what it does to you, like elevated heart rate, hypertension, et cetera, et cetera. And not so much on the social aspects. So for that, I had to learn by doing, for lack of a better term, which is not what I would recommend. And luckily there's a lot better resources out there right now.
And I guess like when you first, I would assume no, but when you first were like practicing harm reduction, did you even know it was harm reduction in that sense?
Not fully. It was more, once I heard the word harm reduction, I'm like, of course, that's what I've been meaning to do. But I don't know. Yeah. I didn't hear about harm reduction and then make that my thing. Yeah. I guess if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess like, what were some of the first like practices for you?
Some of the first practices. One of the first things I was really big on is when I was younger, a lot of the weed you would get from like sketchy places, people still get it from like Tompkins Square Park or Washington or whatever the fuck. A big thing back in the day is they would add weight by putting silicone filler into the fucking nugs in like a really specific way. And you're literally smoking plastic. And one of the first things I did was like, yeah, I was just like taking nugs from people and being like, just burn like a little corner of it. And if it smells like plastic, just don't smoke it. Like,
right.
Yeah.
What about things like trip-sitting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, through the literature I read when I was younger, a lot of it was focused on psychedelics in a like a psychology or psychiatry setting. So a lot of the trip sitting information I got was kind of implicitly like being there to calm and stabilize the person and make sure they're having a good experience. That's always kind of been my framework. And of course, making sure that if no one else is capable of doing that, then I wouldn't say sober, because that's not a realistic expectation when you're like turning up with the boys or the girls or whoever. But like, you know, like the most sober one in the room. So like, if something does go to shit, I'm not like fucking off on Jupiter while someone's trying to jump out a window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, is it something that like you talk about a lot with the people around you when they're taking substances?
Always. That's especially, yeah, I'm very focused on calling it like natural drug consumption is kind of goofy, but I can't think of a better term, right? Because all drugs are inherently synthetic. And just because something's natural doesn't mean it's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
But like, mostly making sure the things that people are saying they're taking and want to be taking are the things that they're actually taking, and there's nothing adulterating the thing that they're taking, whether it's been added by the person that's selling it to them intentionally, or it's just the result of like negligence of the product, how it like breaks down over time or molds or whatever. I'm really on top of that.
I guess, can you go a bit more into that for people who might not know like how things get adulterated?
Oh, yeah, sure. So there's several different ways you can adulterate stuff, right? So for I care a lot about cannabis, and one of the best ways you can adulter cannabis is you can literally spray some sort of alternate drug onto your terrible weed, and then basically the person is smoking fentanyl-laced weed. That's pretty rare, but it does happen. I've seen it. The more common thing for adulterants is someone will mix in fentanyl powder with something like cocaine or MDMA powder, and then sell that, and then you still get the effect of the cocaine or the MDMA, but you also get the effect of the fentanyl, and then you try someone else's cocaine or MDMA, and it doesn't have the fentanyl, and it doesn't hit the same, and yeah, and then you can do too much, and it's a whole hullabaloo.
And I guess
I'm a big fan of that.
People might hear that and think, like, you know, isn't it that if there's any fentanyl at all, you die?
Like, no.
I've gotten that question a lot.
No, that's goofy. The problem with fentanyl additives is you can say you've done a bunch of cocaine in your life before, right? And you know how much cocaine you say you eat 2 grams in a night through your nose of cocaine. That's a lot, but like that's like a normal night out for some people, right? And you're like, I can handle 2 grams of cocaine that like I'm used to. I kind of understand what this will do to me. And then your dealer gets pinched or stops selling, or you can't hit them up that night or whatever, and you get 2 grams from a new person who puts fentanyl in their shit. Then all of a sudden, the expected feeling you have is completely different, even beyond like potential medical ramifications. Like you could just what's the thing, like you're like an energetic zombie, like you have a lot of energy to move your body, but your brain is super foggy from the opioids, and you end up doing some stupid blackout people shit. It's just not good. Yeah, fully blackout drunk, but not even drinking that much,
right?
Yeah.
And I guess also there's the fact that sometimes it's not fentanyl, but it's not the drug you're looking for either.
Yeah. I remember there was this thing in California that happened about a decade ago where a bunch of edibles manufacturers got busted for putting, was it Valium or some shit?
Oh.
Some sort of benzo or barbiturate, some shit, into their edibles in order to make them like hit harder and get more repeat customers. And that was like a legal edibles, so it's crazy. Even, luckily they got brought to justice, but you really never know type shit.
Well, even there's you know, the BK_HR_OC, the Brooklyn harm reduction outreach cooperative. They posted this thing where the Rebel Educationist, they're this like person that does drug testing. And they tested some 2C samples collected in fall of 2024. And of the samples, they said 4 out of 6 were pink-colored powder, 2 out of 6 were lavender color. All samples had been suggested to be 2C. And then they used a spectrometer to find that 6 out of 6 samples had the presence of MDMA and ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
Half of these samples had a possible presence of lidocaine, caffeine, or creatine.
Yeah.
And then using mass spectrometry, they found that half of the samples had the presence of caffeine.
Yeah, that's why, personally, I don't know, I'm not going to advocate for anyone to do drugs, obviously, but if you're going to do drugs, I would recommend doing one that is a very specific compound that you can test for the purity of with a test kit. They're available. You can get them. You can just dip your sample in like a tiny bit of water and then dunk the little strip in there, and then Bob's your uncle. You know that whatever you're trying to ingest is what you think it is. It's like 2C and all these designer drugs are like intentionally made to be like a cocktail of whatever they are having trouble selling or they got cheap. So you never actually know what is in something like 2C versus something like MDMA, which is a known compound, or even cocaine. Not a big fan, but cocaine is a compound. You can test for it. You can find what your purity is, you know?
Right. And I guess you said you were talking about, like, you know, weed. And yeah. Are there any specific, like, harm reduction things that you would like to share with people regarding weed?
Harm reduction. There's two major points that I'd make. The first one is on consumption, and the second one is on people that probably shouldn't smoke weed, just personal right. And scientific opinion. So the harm reduction thing, like on the physical side, is all smoking is bad for you. I love smoking weed. I'm going to say it openly. It is what it is, but it's all smoking is bad for you. It's foreign particles in your lungs that, you know, if your reed isn't clean, it could have mold spores in it. You know, if it's sprayed, you could get popcorn lung from the flavoring. You could get like just literal like oil globulates or whatever stuck in your bronchioles from like incomplete spray jobs. Like, there's risks associated with it, you know what I mean? And if it's grown outdoors, then whatever was outdoors for the past month, if it rained, if there was a dust storm, if a bird took a crap on it, that's going to be on your weed, you know? It is what it is. So the safest way to ingest THC that does the least harm to your body is always going to be in edible form.
Yeah.
That's straight up. And then, so, yeah. And then the second point in terms of who should probably not do weed or honestly any sort of like psychotropic or psychedelic drug is anyone with a family history of schizophrenia. Please, I beg of you. This is like one of the few groups where there's actually like multiple good studies that are like this causes problems. So yeah, you're free to live your life, but just be forewarned that if you have a family history of like schizophrenia or any sort of schizoaffective disorder, like you doing things to mess with your mind is more likely to make your mind shatter in a way that is not productive to your future life. Yeah, that's right. About it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess when I think about that too, I don't know, it was just like, you know, so many people ask me like, so where should I buy it? Like, if it's like that, but I'm just like, I feel like people, like if it's a, you know, if it's a random guy in the park that like you don't know, who doesn't look like he has good weed, then you know that's, you know what I mean? Like, use common sense.
Yeah, it's just, I like to relate this to like video games I play, where like when I watch someone who I'm teaching how to play the video game do things, they make all these mistakes that like I would never make because I've been playing this shit for like a decade. And it's like, why are you doing that? And it's like so deeply embedded in me, like what that is. So especially for like common sense and like reading vibes, I never assume that out of people, because that's always built on like your circumstances and so forth, whether you're able to do that correctly. Like, I don't know, some dude from the suburbs like tries to come into the city to buy weed, he's probably not gonna he may or may not find the best guy, you know what I mean? He just hasn't been in that environment to like be able to read people like that. But that's different.
And I guess I wanted to talk about, you know, like this culture of substance use in the city, because you've been from the city.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah, how would you characterize it? How have you experienced it? Does it feel good to you?
It's very much from the people that it depends on what group you're talking about. There's like several different substance use people in the city, right? So there's the like CEO high roller, I don't know, someone with like a crazy ass job that makes a shitload of money that also does a shitload of drugs, you know, and they're doing it for some sort of like, I don't know, escapism or whatever. And then I guess it's all escapism, but it's like for different reasons, you know. The high rollers are bored, the working stiffs are tired, you know, and the homeless people have nothing better to do, or they've run out of better options for things to do, you know. So I think it's all like a form of escapism. The city isn't exactly what humans evolved for, so the stress gets to everyone at some point.
Yeah. Do you think it's more prevalent in the city?
Maybe. I don't know. Not so much New York City, just because it costs so much to live here that, like, being a true degenerate and, like, still supporting housing and a drug habit is actually kind of an ask.
Yeah. That's so real.
Yeah. I've met a few people like that, and they all make a lot of money doing stuff. Anyway, you know what I mean? Yeah. So...
Yeah,
but everyone else that does that, they end up like homeless at some point. So that's not really, we don't really have that same culture here. But on the flip side, since you don't have to drive anywhere in New York City, there are people that are some level of fucked up, like their entire day, for like, no, like they live their entire life in a haze, like 365, 24/7, because you can just like stumble onto the subway, stumble off the subway, fucking get wherever you're going. You know what I mean? Like,
What about with, like, younger people? Like, I feel like, have you seen it change since, like,
high
school and stuff like that?
Younger people drink a lot less than they used to, which is good. But they vape a lot more than, I think, my generation smoked cigarettes. I think we were so close to kicking tobacco as, like, a habit for people. And then fucking Juul and shit swooped in. And now we got all these youngins smoking their vapes and shit.
Right.
Wait, let me rip my vape and be a hypocrite real quick. But
I feel like, I don't know. I have experienced the drinking less. I feel like I do meet more people now that drink, not selectively, but you know, that are kind of like, yeah, like I don't really want to get drunk. I don't really drink that often.
Yeah. And even like, beyond that, I feel like the drug use has gotten less social, which is a little worrying to me.
Well, like, I think everything's gotten less social.
Yeah. But like, I don't want to fucking advocate drug use in teens again. But I don't know. Before, when I was a youngin and so forth, we were fucking out here booling in parks, like fucking drinking a 40, passing it around, smoking a spliff, passing it around, talking shit. You know, like. Cracking jokes.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, building culture, as fucking pretentious as that sounds. And I don't know. That's, like, not really a thing anymore. My bad. So, if you are insistent on some sort of oral fixation, or if your stomach just doesn't agree with cannabis and you still need to, like, ingest it for some medical reason, the best way to inhale it through your lungs is by vaporizing it. With like a volcano vaporizer, like a Pax, anything that will heat up the flower, the herb enough to like decarboxylate, like activate the THC and kind of boil it off from the plant without combusting it and like releasing all the ash and smoke and funky organics that like make the tar and the resin and the grossness.
And then also that you can get harm reduction supplies.
Right, you can get harm reduction supplies. I don't know if you can link anything.
I'll link it in the chat.
Anywhere. But yeah, here, I'll just send it to you right now. Just, I'm sure you already know what this is, but... that's where you go for New York State, at least, to order your harm reduction supplies.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's like they send you free... xylazine and fentanyl strips, like literally it's like a box of 100 or something.
Yeah, and the important thing is only ask for it once. they don't like being requested multiple times. If you think it hasn't gone through, just wait like a couple days and then ask again. Because sometimes it takes a while. It's a New York State computer system. You can't ask too much from it.
Mm-hmm. And also naloxone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Word. And it's important to know that now you don't need to go have a Narcan. I mean, it's good, but like they're virtual Narcan trainings. You don't need to do an in-person training anymore, although those are beneficial. But I'm saying like you don't need the card that you used to need.
I never got that. But.
Yeah, you used to like need a card, and now you don't have to do that. You can get naloxone usually also at some pharmacies for free, in New York City at least, and through this program. So that's good to know. There are also locations with drug testing through like a spectrometer that go through the city every week, and the location changes every day. Which I will also link when the time comes. But those are good. I think they're on point, like 2 days a week, at least. And yeah, there are harm reduction centers around the city. There's On Point, there's St. Anne's, there's Alliance. Do you think of more?
I think another important thing to mention is it doesn't matter what part of the chain you are, like distributor, retail, consumer, you should always test your shit. It's free. It's not that hard to do. You just need to do a little bit of legwork, and no one will ask you questions about, you know what I mean? Like, no, everyone is there to make sure everyone is okay. And that should be in everyone's best interest, honestly.
And I guess that kind of leads me to, like, how have you, I guess, you know, led conversations or been able to like impress the importance of this onto people in your life and like change the ways they all care for each other?
I think the most important thing is like aggressive compassion. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can't always leave the caring like an assumption in the air. You gotta always make sure like people know, like, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah, I want this to go correctly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if the person's weird and pedantic and they give a shit, you can be like, these are my studies, my sources.
Right.
Yeah, you just always have to be on top of being a good person. Sounds so cringe, but I don't know. Yeah, just always being there for people. It's an active thing. It's never passive.
Definitely. And I think also, I guess something else I want to talk about was like drug-induced crisis. And I guess the options, but obviously we can't be like, this is the options for every single crisis that's ever going to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, typical, like basic, like how to stay calm, keep somebody else calm, keep the environment calm, you know?
Yeah. my thing, this kind of feeds into one of my pet peeves is, all those videos of like people like intentionally scaring people that are like tripping balls.
Yeah.
Or like when I see that in person, I get big mad. I do not fuck with that at all. Cause what psychedelics are doing especially is they're like replasticizing your neurons to an extent. So you're like essentially rewriting someone's brain like a little bit, depending on how much they took. So if you throw like an unnecessary negative experience in there that they didn't generate themselves, like, why? That's just a dick move. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm throwing hands when I'm out of the trip if you do that to me. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what I was asking was, like, would you go into kind of the process of that for people who don't know of, like, how the psychedelic journey kind of, like, in the brain sense, you know, happens?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it depends on what psychedelic you're talking about, because they all activate on different, like, neurons.
I guess I'm thinking, like, people a lot now are talking about, like, shrooms.
Okay. I think the best thing I can do to compare to do shrooms is to compare it to a different psychedelic. Okay, so... shrooms are like grounded, earthy. You like feel your digestion. You're like, you like feel nerve endings that are normally like subconsciously like suppressed, I guess. So you like feel everything. Whereas like LSD is more like you think different things. It's more cerebral in terms of actual experience. Yeah, that's probably the best way to describe the difference, at least in my experience.
I guess I was thinking more on like what does it act on in your brain.
That's what I'm saying. They act on completely different mechanisms in your brain. Psilocybin versus LSD.
No, I'm not about psilocybin.
Yes. Okay. Psilocybin. It stimulates the release of, I think, serotonin, like the bonding hormone, and depending on the person, dopamine. And then it, I don't know exactly how it antagonizes your neural structure beyond that.
Mm.
Like, I just know it releases those two neurotransmitters. Yeah, that's all I got. Other than the general feeling of the nerve endings that are subconsciously blocked, you feel, is like a very real thing.
Yeah,
I don't think a lot.
I guess we can mention that just it leads to like altered perception and like.
Altered perception for sure. The progression of, I don't know, symptoms, if you want to call it, in the average person, from my experience, is initially the person will get giggly. Like, you can't stop giggling at shit. You just have, like, a random smile. Doesn't matter what's happening. And then the person will start to report slight auditory hallucinations, like things that aren't actually happening sonically that they're hearing. And then they'll start to get closed-eyed visuals. Like, it starts with maybe fractals. Like, you know, when you normally close your eyes, you see like a kind of half reflection of what you last saw when you had your eyes open, especially if there's a light source. When you start to trip, though, you get slight distortions of that as your beginning visual change. And then as you go deeper into the trip, you start to feel those nerve endings that are normally subconsciously repressed. Like, your digestive system has a lot of fucking nerve endings that you don't normally feel. Unless you have like some sort of blockage or like crazy nonsense going on, but you feel all of them. And then that's when you start to get like kind of the distorted vision, the colors, the, I don't know what to call it, like a kind of like a narrowing of the vision into a tunnel with like white around it. There's a specific name for that effect that I'm not remembering. And then that you can kind of slip between that part and the earlier parts, like as you go through your trip, and then like you can peak and valley, and then eventually as it all leaves your system, you just kind of go back to normalcy isn't the right word, but yeah, homeostasis, I guess.
Yeah, and it's very tied to like neuroplasticity, and some people will say that like it enhances it.
Yeah, it definitely does
interact with it. And I guess I should define that, but like the concept of, yeah, like the brain can wire itself again and again and again, or at least kind of like modulate itself in its reactions, which, yeah, substances, I don't know. I think part of the harm reduction aspect is that people will always kind of, or will mostly see this like sense of altered perception and reality as, yeah, just like escapism, which it often is. And also people do have like really intense spiritual and emotional experiences on these substances that can't be denied, you know what I mean? Or like that can't be,
of course,
can't be minimized, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I ate shrooms and watched the solar eclipse 2 times in a row, like the total solar eclipse. It was awesome. Highly recommend, not to endorse drug usage, but that was pretty great.
Yeah,
I would say that was a spiritual experience each time.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, you know, as you said, like everybody will have a desire most times at one point in their life to alter their sense of perception.
Mm-hmm.
Even through just like drinking or
like a beer or something, like liquid confidence or whatever. Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting that that is so, like the concept of liquid confidence, for example, is so accepted and normal. But God forbid somebody like use a substance that's not alcohol or weed.
I mean, so, like,
for the same,
it all comes back to capitalism, am I right? I mean, there's so much vested interest in alcohol consumption and production and tobacco consumption and production, even though, like, objectively, you could probably have the same amount of people that drink do ketamine and there'd be less deaths and less violence. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's just that it's like the weight of tradition, right? Like, one of the theories why people settled down in the first place was to like brew beer and like grow grain to like brew beer and get fucked up with the boys. Like, it's so deeply rooted that, I don't know. And all these other ones are so relatively new. Like, even though cannabis has been cultivated for like 4,000 or 5,000 years at this point, it's still like relatively new compared to like we started civilization to like brew that good shit, you know.
And I don't know, I'm thinking about also how people have this tendency to address substances as this sort of like scale or hierarchy. Or this like, first you drink, then you smoke weed, then you do shrooms.
I was about to say like, I disagree with the gateway drug thing. Other than alcohol is definitely a gateway drug to doing other drugs. Simply because I don't know, in my experience and other people's like experience I've heard about and seen, like they're like not doing anything crazy, and then, you know, they go out for like a night of drinking, and then they'll do like two lines of cocaine, you know, they'll fucking eat like three tabs, and then like 4 days later I'll like fucking find them in the drunk tank, like, okay, buddy. Like, without the drinking, none of the other substance use would have happened. That's like the one thing that I can kind of get behind the gateway thing, not the weed or anything else.
Well, what do you, like, I, not because I'm contradicting you, but like, what do you have against the rest of the gateway drug idea?
I just don't think it makes any sense. Other than, I don't think the correlation means causation, because simply because weed has been black marketed underground for so long that it just, people that sell weed also tend to sell other stuff. So if you're like, you know, this weed ain't kicking, you got anything better for me, you know, they don't have any better weed, they'll be like, hey, try this cocaine,
right?
You know, and that's just been my experiences to like the gateway, like what it means to gateway into other stuff from weed. It's been not because the people were like, they wouldn't necessarily have stopped smoking weed if they had access to better cannabis products,
right?
Yeah.
And I think also, but I guess something, the way that I was thinking about it also is, people are thinking that these substances have some sort of like scale. You know, it's like weed will bring you to like 6, and then like acid will bring you to 9. Or whatever, you know what I mean?
It's all dosage.
Yeah, exactly.
And what the popularly accepted recreational dosage of something is. I agree.
And also just your body and your chemistry. You know, like, every person is going to react differently to a different substance.
Yeah. It's just like, you could totally take enough acid to like just have a little bit of more color in your life and see everything a little more vividly, you know, release a little more dopamine and serotonin, and like, you could be more capable of existing than someone who's like drank like 4 beers,
right?
And you know what, it's all dosage. The thing is the socially acceptable, or I guess the recreationally expected dosage of acid is one that you fucking see stars and you're like flying through the universe for like 6 hours, you know, versus like, you know, the societally or the consumption, the normalized consumption of something like alcohol would be like, oh, I'm going to drink a few beers or whatever.
Right.
And someone who's fucking flying through space on acid versus someone who's had a couple beers, of course, the guy that's had a couple beers is probably less debilitated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because also the beer, I feel like there's so much more preparation sometimes that goes into a trip. Or, like, at least, you know, you're thinking, like, I'm going to be on something and, like, you know, I'm not going to be reacting like my normal self. Whereas I feel like sometimes people are so used to socially acceptable drinking that it becomes almost like a, you know, like, you don't think about it. You don't think about how you're going to act necessarily right before you do it.
Yeah.
And also the people around you aren't, like, catching you in the same way, because you're allowed to, like, make all these, like, stupid mistakes.
Definitely been in circles where, like, eating acid is as normalized as, like, drinking a beer, and you kind of get the same, I think it's just human nature to, like, flatten expectations of a communal experience, because they would just casually eat, like, a tab of acid and just, like, vibe throughout their day. I'm like, all right, dude.
But I don't even think,
like, that's fucking crazy, like, to me. But, like, they basically just treated it the same way as, like, you know, like, drinking beer. Like, they're like, me eating acid, this is my normal self. Okay.
Yeah. No, but I think, I mean, like, other people, at least, or, like, not even talking to other people, but, you know, like, with yourself, I think.
For sure. You have more
of this assumption of, like, oh, this might be something that I could act super different, versus, like, people are usually like, I know how to handle myself drunk.
And that's true. That's true. It really depends on each person's intentionality, like you said, and, like, their body as to, like, how they react to it. Like, some people can, like, eat, like, 5 grams of shrooms and feel nothing because they just didn't realize, and they're just kind of ignoring the entire experience. I've, like, seen it happen. It's kind of crazy.
Right.
And then some dude can, like, fucking inhale, like, some powder accidentally, and just be like, oh my god, I had shrooms, and then just have, like, the craziest trip of his life. And he probably had, like, less than a microgram of active ingredient. I don't know.
Yeah, it's super also, yeah, exactly, like, what somebody's expecting, what somebody is making, like, mental room for.
Yeah, the placebo is huge.
The placebo is huge. And also, I think, as you said, like, you know, drug setting and stuff like that, where if you're not in the right space, your brain will also, like, react, or, like, not let you, but, you know, you're gonna have some form of different reaction than if you're in, like, a super comfortable space with people you enjoy being around and trust.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. It's gonna be fucking awful. Speaking from personal experience, it's really bad. Set and setting is important. And if you have any doubt about, like, whether your set and setting is going to be valid for the entire time of your experience, just don't do it.
Well, how would you, I guess, what would you tell people, like, to assess risk, set setting, you know what I mean?
Assess risk, well, I mean, like, is if there's, like, any sort of time constraint that isn't, like, a day, like, 24 hours, you should probably not do it.
Yeah.
You know, if your partner or parents or whatever, like, that's just not a good thing to hang over your head and think about during the experience. That's just bad. You don't want, like, really, really bright lights, generally speaking. Right. That's pretty bad. You don't want it to be pitch black, but, like, you know, mood lighting is chill. Like, whatever your favorite genre of relaxing music is, and if you're telling me you relax to grindcore, you're trolling. Like, actually relax music. like nothing that's, like, screaming some shit about, like, Hitler was right or whatever over, like, fucking breakbeats. Like, no. Don't listen to that. And then, yeah, if you have some sort of, like, I don't know, comfort show or, like, sound you can put on in addition to or instead of the music, you should probably throw that on your TV. You know, like, warm, vibrant colors, something you'll just, like, look at and appreciate, especially if it's your first time. And then have, like, at least one person whose sole responsibility is to make sure no one kills themselves, and everyone is, like, having a good time, who is ideally sober or very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell that's you, very important.
Also, I had something and then I completely forgot it. Give me 30 seconds. But, also, you know, if you're going to do substance or whatever, if you're disabled, be aware that your disability might, flare up or interact with the substance in certain ways.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially, for example, if you have, seizures or, episodes.
If you have seizures, you should probably not take recreational drugs without seriously asking your doctor first and making it clear that this is going to happen, but you need to be medically sure it's not going to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. None of this is never do this, but know what you're doing and know how it's going to interact.
Yeah, and also set up definitely some risk factors. Yeah, there's definitely some risk factors that will schizoaffective disorders in your family, or that you have a history of seizures, or if you have a history of seizures. I'm not saying don't do drugs, but seriously have a conversation with your doctor. They're there to help you. Please. Yeah. There's no mandated reporting or anything about any of the stuff we're talking about. They want to have this conversation with you so you can be the healthiest you can.
Amen. The doctors are not out to get you sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Fucking love them. In this particular instance, you should talk to them about it. There's other things depending on the state, but this is valid.
Yeah. No, definitely just be aware of your body's limits. Stuff that might happen to you. Also, even things like temperature control. It is so, and crucial to be in the right, setting in terms of, is it too cold? Is it too warm? Do I have things around me? Also, the ability to change settings.
Yo, that temperature shit, holy fuck. Preach. I forgot about that completely. Yo, if you are going to do anything, make sure you have the ability to temperature control your room. And the person who's the trip sitter knows how to use that. And then there's a blanket or two available.
Yeah. Or if you're outside, bring a sweater, but also wear layers that you can take off,
mm-hmm.
Have variety. Same thing with setting, make sure that you're not going, if it's your first time taking something, you're not going on some urban exploration.
Yeah. Yeah. Your first time taking something should be in a space that's already deeply familiar to you. You shouldn't go fucking find a new spot to do this. This should be in a place that you're already deeply comfortable with and familiar with.
That has the resources that you need.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Yeah, I think, I don't know, I would say also just start small,
Yeah. You can always take more, but you can't untake what you just took, so.
Right. And also, something we haven't touched on, drug interactions. Combinations that you should not take.
The classic that everyone does, even though it's not good for you, cocaine and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
They synthesize in your liver to make super cocaine, which sounds fun. Until you realize it gives you not the craziest cocaine. Hangover you've ever had in your life. No, it's legit cocaine, but 100 times stronger or some shit. It's fucked. And it does so much damage to your liver and your kidneys, and your hangover will want to die the next day from the hangover. So just don't. For your own feeling the next day. It's not worth taking that much happiness from the next day.
Also, in general, psychedelics and alcohol.
Yeah, those don't mix.
Not the most beautiful mix either.
Yeah, and anything that will give you the spins and psychedelics. And then I'll include weed in that category, because if you take enough weed, you start to see visuals and hear things. Anything that will give you the spins, like alcohol or certain benzodiazepines and stuff, you should not mix with psychedelics, because then you'll start spinning down your rabbit hole of nonsense. Benzos and alcohol is, that's the classic rock star killer. Don't do that. Yeah.
Do not do that.
That's instant liver toxicity. Don't do that. And right. You can also die by aspirating on your vomit from that one, because you'll be too sedated for your body to wake yourself up. Don't do that. That's a bad one.
Also, just in general, like stimulants and depressants.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, uppers and downers, as the kids say. Don't mix the two. You don't want to. Upper plus downer does not equal neutral. Upper plus downer equals an up in a way you didn't want and a down in a way you didn't want. You never baseline from it.
It's never what you want it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, you would think, you know, two minus two, but no.
No. They're not equivalent in any way, because it's all different chemicals.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is research your chemicals. Just know, like, even if you're gonna take something in a way that's like, you know, is very impulsive and you're just gonna do it in that moment, like, it takes a few seconds to Google and know at least the minimum about what this can do. And also, and people share their effects or like their reactions to it online a lot.
Yeah, and if you can't find it with the Google search, just don't do it. RIP your money. Like, it's fine. Right. Like, you don't need to, feeling like you need to get your money's worth out of whatever the fuck you just bought is a really bad mindset when that can be a big problem. It's not worth it. $40 or whatever, even if you spent like $200, it's not worth it. It's just...
Yep.
If you can't know for sure what it is, like, on your own terms independently, just don't do it.
And also, I don't know, don't just, like, seek it. Don't, like, trust, you know, one source only, is what I would say. Like, cross-reference, ask the people around you, get, like, real-life opinions as well.
Yes.
All that. But in general, something I also wanted to mention was, you know, if you're like, the risk is not only ODing. The risk can also be like, yeah, like literally just like breaking your brain.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a thing you can get, anyone who does psychedelics, where you have like persistent after images.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a thing that happens to people.
Do you want to describe what that means to people?
I don't know if you know Channel 5, Andrew Callahan. He did an entire ass hour-long podcast about like his experience with it and like talking to people about it. So I would link that under. But long story short, basically your perception is permanently altered from your psychedelic experience.
Mm.
Like, you have, let's say, a baseline perception, you go into your psychedelic experience, and then at the point that you should have emerged from it, you still have alterations to your perception that are essentially permanent, like visual snow, colored shadows, stuff like that, like fucking floaters and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or even a whole bunch bodily of... perception, you know, bodily.
Yeah. Or you can have the thing where, what's it called, depersonalization.
Mm-hmm.
Where you feel like you're essentially like a trapped behind your eyes, and you're like piloting like a meat mecha suit from Evangelion or some shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Or derealization, where it feels like nothing around.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Which is the other side of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's just the thing. Also, like with any form of, if you're, what is it called? Not suited, but. You're at risk of more dissociation or dissociative symptoms than others. Just be aware of that, because substances can absolutely induce more dissociation or periods of dissociation after taking the substances.
Yes.
Very much so. Yeah. And that can be very dysregulating or...
It's pretty debilitating to some of the people that I personally know that experience it. It's like constant visual snow over their entire like field of vision that is like not gone away for like 5+ years. It's, you can't really drive when you have that kind of thing. It's like hard to explain that to like the DMV or whatever.
Right. And also, on that note, psychedelics and stimulants, not
fun, but not recommended.
Yeah, not the, or let's just say a quick pathway to this type of brain breaking.
Yes, very, very quick pathway to this type of brain damage. Very, very quick pathway. Yeah, holy shit.
Yeah, we're really just helping the people out here. Just not freaking everybody out.
Don't break your body the way I broke mine, Smile. I did it for the people.
So y'all could hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I guess we have 5 minutes left. So anything you wanted to touch on before?
Yes, actually. So I'm sure anyone who's listening to this has been keenly following the legal cannabis market in New York State. And I'd like to say for the record that what the fuck going on, guys? Where is my beautiful indoor weed? Why is all of this shit doo-doo fart outdoor and people are like fucking saying like they're proud of this? Like, you know what's on the outdoors? Dirt, bugs, mold, fucking corn borers. Holy fuck, I have trauma from corn borers. But anyway, dude, they shit inside the stem too, like it's unusable for anything. Anyway, the important thing is, what are we doing? Like, why is this so difficult? I don't know why the OCM was fucking foisted with all of these responsibilities to define their own regulations and terms, and then they keep getting second-guessed by the legislature and the governor, and everyone's just in limbo. And I want people to be able to buy weed that is tested, safe, and legal. And it's... You can't, there's better quality weed on the black market than there is for sale legally. And that's like, I don't care how much your fucking Jesus weed costs legally. The fact that it doesn't exist is just like insane. Yeah. They literally, I remember being in conversations with these people and they cared more about how they were going to spend the tax money than they cared about like how the market was going to function legally. Mm-hmm. And I was just a little kid getting triggered into oblivion in the corner, like, I'm lobbying for the good guys and nobody is listening to me.
Right. And what would you want to see happen, I guess?
I would want it to be like, you know how the New York State and City liquor boards work? Mm-hmm. Where there's essentially like a community vote for a place that wants to like serve alcohol. I would want cannabis to essentially be treated the same way, where there's like community panels whether or not to approve licenses, and it's not the OCM's sole discretion, essentially, with like way more stipulations than you need to open any sort of alcohol serving or brewing or distillation business. I just want I'm a big fan of regulation. I'm a left motherfucker, but like there's too much taxes and there's too many regulations in the industry right now. Like I'm just gonna be real. Like And it's not the fact that actually too many regulations isn't correct. The regulations exist. There's a lot of them and they're very unclear and badly worded. Right. And unless you can talk to a representative, you just get fucked. You're trying to interpret this fucking like legalese nonsense that's like 3 degrees removed from human speech. And it's just impossible to parse. Like I can read legalese. And even for me, I'm like, this is basically a bunch of like someone will figure it out later in the courts, and like I don't got money like that. What the fuck? Like figure it out now. Legislate it, like litigate over it later. Like fucking figure out the law now. We can argue over it in court later. Like why is the court writing law anyway?
Mm-hmm. Well, because they haven't distributed that many licenses.
Mm-hmm. They have, but the thing is it's so. A, cost prohibitive, and B, since it's not federally legal, any bank with an FDIC, like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation thing,
mm-hmm.
they're not allowed to take cannabis money because it's still technically a Schedule I drug. So you need like a state bank, or you need to do all your business in cash and somehow pay your taxes in cash.
Right. Convenient.
Yeah, awesome. Amazing. Truly peak. What a great system.
Yeah, and it's been legal for what, like 4 years now?
Recreational. In New York State, yeah, about 4 years, but I'd say for like a functional ecosystem, it still hasn't been established because the regulations were like super unclear until like a year ago. And now they're just kind of unclear.
But I feel like also nobody is trying to buy dispensaries anymore because they're so expensive.
Yeah, which is mostly a problem with regulatory burden, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And also because you can't get an FDI, you can't get a loan from a regular bank, basically. You need a state-chartered bank, not a federally chartered bank. I don't know how much of a fuck your listeners care about this, but anyway, the important deal is you need like a small bank, and there's only so many small banks that are within the state where the business operates that are able to do, you know, there's only a certain number of businesses they can serve before they get overwhelmed or they're like, you know, because they get to choose what business they want to support.
Yeah.
Because there's some, like, you know what I mean? There's less competition in the market for financing all of this, which is a little unfortunate. Yeah, I hope it gets federally legalized and that all this bullshit can just disappear. That would be cool.
Hell yeah. And are you for, I guess, the hot topic question, right? Are you for, like, increased legalization of substances?
Absolutely. I am 100% for increased legalization of substances with the strong caveat that if the way we're going to do it is the way that we legalized weed, I'm not for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is not destroyed the black market. It's reinforced the black market. And the people that they tried to entice out with their incentives were badly targeted. They missed the best people. And the best people that I know are still black market and doing it as they did it before. Right. They came out of the woodwork. They tried to lobby. They tried to advocate. The woodwork said, go fuck yourself. So they retreated back into it. So I got out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
That would do it.
Yeah. Side note, fuck Kathy Hochul. Anyway.
Yeah. Little, nobody heard that. It's okay.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Not getting political or anything.
But yeah. Okay. Well, this has pretty much been our hour. Thank you for coming on to this show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Spreading the knowledge. See, you were able to yap for longer than you wanted to. and yeah, you've been listening to Moss Radio on mossradio.com, and this has been Drop in Harm Reduction Chats. And